And I'm Jamie. I'm an alcoholic. And that's a good start. Y'all are going to have to bear with me. I got a piece of metal cut out of my eye yesterday. I wrote a few notes in my book, and God's got a sense of humor because I can't read them. So we'll see how it goes. It's kind of a daunting task to try and get, all of what God's done for me in my life in 1 hour, but I'm going to do the best I can, and if it's really bad, then nobody else asks me to ever do this again. So, I'm Jamie. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sponsor. He's got a sponsor. I've got a home group, which is this meeting right here. I've got a service position. I share that because when I came in, people said, if you want what we got, you do what we do. And, so if you're interested in anything in my story, well, that's how, that's part of how I did it. So, my sobriety date is, as it was said, August 28, 2015. And, for those of you that don't know, I'm younger. That's come up quite a bit. And I don't, honestly, some people that have told their story before, that have got 20, 30, 40 year drinking careers, I don't know how you can go back and remember that stuff. Cause I was, this past week I was doing a little bit of reflecting it's kind of crazy. Because things in my life today are so good, but it's good for me to remember what it used to be like. I hope I never forget my last drink and that feeling, because I'm the kind of person that it actually wasn't my deepest bottom, but I was just done, but anyways, let's get to the boring stuff. I was born in And on August 21st, 1993, so if y'all do the math, I'll be 26 and on the 21st. I didn't have a very long drinking career. I qualify myself as an alcoholic. I didn't drink every day. I didn't really got the opportunity. It sounds awesome. When I came in here, I qualify myself as an alcoholic because... when I started drinking, I couldn't stop, and every time I got the opportunity to drink, I drank. I'm the kind of alcoholic where I never didn't want to not drink alcoholically. It talks about in our literature, drinking like a gentleman, not interested, it says we can neither, or I didn't want to control, I couldn't control and enjoy my drinking at the same time. I could either control it or enjoy it, And my goal really wasn't to drink like a gentleman. It was to just, everybody leave me alone, I grew up in Charleston, South Carolina. It goes back to kindergarten. Pretty much as far back as I can remember, something was just not right. I couldn't exactly put my finger on it. Now I know I was restless, irritable, and discontent. Those are my first memories. It's just, something's not right. I was held back in kindergarten. I got that August birthday. So my first school memories are like, hey, go through kindergarten. Let's do it again. So I'm watching the kids that I grew up with go on to the next grade, and I'm having to sit back and do it over again. But I killed it the second year. I'm colorblind and dyslexic, and so there's more reasons where I'm sitting here going, what's wrong with me? I can also remember growing up, all I really wanted was to be accepted by my brother. He's 4 years older than me. And, I thought he was the coolest person on the block. And he just, 4 years is that tough age. Now I see it's really, it wasn't really anything personal, but he just did not want me hanging out with him, But again, the more of these thoughts of me not adding up in my head to somebody else's feelings that I, you know, because I judged how I felt based off of how I thought you thought about me. I never asked you. I just assumed. And my perspective is skewed. You know, I'm an alcoholic. So, you know, and it's all about me. You know, so, but yeah, so there's two reasons right there, you know. And like I said, I had a, it was a good childhood. My parents, you know, upper middle class. I never went without for a single day. You know, my parents to this day, you know, they've been married for 38 years. And, you know, and really looking back at it now, some of my biggest living amends is towards my parents, because, you know, they loved me enough to start putting up those boundaries, and that's why I'm in here this young, you know, because I couldn't do it, you know, I just couldn't do it anymore, you know, and when they started, you know, quit enabling me, those were some of the most loving things that they ever did, you know, you know, and I, but going back to, you know, so I went to a middle school, it was public middle school, I went to the public middle school in South Carolina. I think they're the worst public school system, probably like second to worst in the country. And so my parents wanted to provide a solid education for me, so they moved me in fourth grade to a private school, Mason Prep, downtown Charleston on the harbor. It was a pretty badass setup. But again, I've got my friends are, you know, at this school, and in fourth grade, pull you out, we're going to put you in a private school. And like I said, I never went without a single day in my childhood. But I got to say, there's some money in Charleston. When you start getting into those private school, I was in classes with people whose parents were in different tax brackets, you know, and again, that thought of feeling, you know, something doesn't feel right, you know, because, you know, they're getting dropped off in Bentleys and Range Rovers and, you know, and there's nothing wrong with a Hyundai Elantra, but that's what I, you know, rode into school with. And so again, whether it was there or not, it was my perspective, you know, and it just didn't, like I said, when I think back, you know, it was constantly thoughts of I just don't add up, you know, and but I you know, I got through middle school and into high school, and that's right about where you know, things start to get interesting, because I went to another Catholic private school in Charleston, South Carolina. It's called Bishop England, and freshman year was super weird. You know, because, like I said, when I think back, I mean, I did not enjoy that part of my life, you know, and it's because I'm an alcoholic, and I hadn't found a solution at that point, you know. I mean, there was a lot of reasoning why I just felt different, and, but my first drink probably came around freshman year. It was a place called Goat Island in South Carolina. You can only get there by boat. It's off of Isle of Palms. And I remember I was with a buddy, and we stole a bunch of his mom's beer, you know, and which was kind of weird because she was actually one of my teachers. But I just remember drinking and that first drink, I'll sit here and tell you, that was one of the best moments of my life, because I had finally arrived, you know, and I got stumbly drunk, and it was you know, and we got in trouble, and it was real, you know, I had to write out an apology letter and bring it to her on Monday, and I was in so much, you know, you had to get there by boat, and so, you know, she found out all her beers missing, she called my parents, and so we're, you know, coming back on the boat to the dock, and my parents are just sitting at the dock, you know, and I'm like, I just remember that was my first solution, you know, that was the first time that all those thoughts and feelings growing up, they were eased a little bit, you know. I did belong, you know. I you know, all that, you're not good enough, you know. You're not smart enough. You're not this. You're not that. You know. It didn't seem to matter as much, you know, when I started, you know, got drunk. And And I remember that day thinking, man, I'm going to do this every chance I get, you know. And I obsessed about it. That's the, you know, my first drink was alcoholic. You know, I hear different types of people out there who drink for a certain period of time and they can manage it or whatever. No, my first drink was alcoholic, and I started thinking, all right, that was really cool with beer, but let's get a little bit more efficient. Let's get stronger, efficient, and you know, and so I started planning and scheming. You know, that was my whole thing. And, you know, I was 14 years old. I obviously, you know, didn't have access to buy it, so I had to start getting creative. And that's when I started to learn the value of lying and manipulating. You know, and that's, you know, that's kind of where it took off at that point, you know. And I guess a disclaimer now, yes, drugs are absolutely a part of my story, but what I've found since I've been in here is it really doesn't matter drugs or alcohol, because that's not really why I came into these rooms, in a sense. You know, that was obviously sobriety is why I came in here, but those were just kind of a symptom of what was really going on. You know, I if you told me eat a handful of pine straw, it'll make you feel different, I'd do it, you know. And so it really didn't matter whether it was drugs, alcohol, whatever it was. So it's really not even important to really get into what exactly it was. I mean, alcohol is, it was my first problem, and it brings me back to my other problems, you know. And so that's, you know, I that's why I'm in AA, you know, because I am an alcoholic, you know. And but anyway, so I started getting in a lot of trouble with my parents. You know, my dad's an engineer. Everything's white and black. You know, there's no gray area. My mom, she's the feeler. I probably should have been kicked out way sooner. In fact, in all seriousness, my parents almost got a divorce because I manipulated that relationship. You know, I played my mom on this side and my dad over here, and that's what alcoholism looks like in my life, is I can knowingly manipulate my parents' marriage because I wanted to drink, you know. But yeah, so my dad said, you know, don't drink, you know, and he says, don't drink. So in his brain, if I drink, it's because I'm disobeying him. You know, he was raised in a military household. He's an engineer. It's real. It's just don't drink. It's because I said so. And so that was the first issue, because at the time I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I didn't know I couldn't not drink. You know, and all I knew is I was obsessed with it. I loved it. You know, I was willing to do anything for it. My mom, there's some more alcoholism on her side, so she understood that. She kind of knew from the start there's something else going on. You know, the clash, constant clash. You know, I think I was grounded for like 4 years straight. And the crazy thing is I was still getting beer delivered to the house when I was grounded. You know, I mean, I had some people, you know, drop the pearl in the river, you know, right in the bushes, you know, I mean, they would go on a walk and I'd be outside, you know, putting it in the lawnmower, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Because I loved alcohol. I loved the feeling it produced, you know, and if it still produced that feeling to this day, I don't know if I'd still be doing it. But the point is it quit working, you know, we've all got our kind of our war stories out there. I mean, the biggest kind of point in my war stories of drinking is I had plenty of reasons to quit drinking. You know, I mean, I got a DUI at 16. I rolled a truck 8 times, tore up like 36 feet of guardrail and I-26, which, fun fact, they charge you per foot to fix that. So at 16 years old, all right, let's add another factor in. You don't get to drive it. We're going to lose your license junior year of high school, you know. And that stuff mattered to me. You know, I mean, nobody wants to get dropped off by mommy and daddy to high school. You know, I mean, that's not cool. And so, you know, there's another thing. You know, I ended up losing I think my dad's insurance company called and said, you know, he's got USAA insurance. And they basically said, we're going to give you two options. You either drop him off the insurance or we're going to drop you. And he went, who? And so that was the answer to that. But I had plenty of reasons, you know, from the age of 16. And and ended up getting kicked out of that private school because you weren't allowed to. I don't know. Charleston's a pretty small town. I think the person that cut me out of the truck was one of my football coaches. It's kind of a blur that day, but you know, the secret was out. You know, and at that point, so I had to go back to the public school system, and that's when the party started. I basically walked into this public school, and the way my credits were, I had already done more than the entire curriculum by my sophomore year. And so basically it was, I just had to show up, and that's what I did. You know, I just showed up. I'd get, you know, drunk in the parking lot in the morning and go to class, and but again, another new group of people I have to meet, a new group of, you know, and I struggle with that as an alcoholic. Even today, you know, if I said, hey, I'm going to go to the Triangle Club for a meeting tonight, there's that thought in the back of my head, it's like a bunch of new people I got to go, you know. And I have found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous are much, much easier to do that, because, you know, as long as I just go up and say, hey, I'm new, people are like, ah, you know, and it's, you know, but yeah, so, and also at this particular public school I went to, it was like a pharmacy at lunchtime, you know, and so I got to learn about quite a few different dry goods that I'd never tried. And I found out that, yes, alcohol is awesome, but there are other ways to get to the same place a little bit quicker and with less trash. Because drinking beer how I drank it, there was a lot of cans. And it's also easier to sneak it inside your house. You just put it in your pocket, do this, do that, and it really took off there. You know, I really found something that really made me feel different, because that was really my goal to set out. There was no drinking because it was fun or anything like that. I was just so unhappy with what was going on inside that I just wanted to change it. You know, and honestly, I was able to find, you know, people say, well, what's your drug of choice? If you ask me that now, there's like three or four. I got to have them all. I can't just do one. If I got three, I'm going to obsess about the one I don't have, you know, and there's never enough because it's going to run out. But I remember, it was a weird, a weird situation where I'm still getting a lot of trouble with my parents, and in a semi blackout, I feel like somebody said that's called a brownout or something. I don't know, but I remember saying, I can't stop, to my parents, and they had done their research. They were waiting for the cues. I mean, and I 8 hours later, I was in a car to go into rehab. You know, I mean, it was like, wait a minute. You know, I remember in the car going, wait a minute, can we talk about this? Like, and I showed up to McCord Adolescent Treatment Center. I was 17 years old. It's basically a rehab for problem kids in Orangeburg, South Carolina. There were 14 people there. It was seven girls, eight guys, something like that. And you were watched every second. I mean, they would come running flashlights every 15 minutes to make sure you weren't choking on shoelaces or something. I don't know. That's when I was like, man, this is where my life is as a 17-year-old. I turned 18 at that facility, you know. And I go back and I think, because I didn't stay sober after I left that place, but the one thing I do remember is a Jason E. He brought an AA meeting in on Monday nights to that treatment facility, and I will never forget the feeling I got in that meeting, you know, because I remember hearing the hope. At that time, again, I didn't think alcoholic, drug addict, you know, I knew that, you know, there was a problem, but I didn't think I was an alcoholic at that time. But I do remember hearing the hope. I related to how he shared about the feelings of why he drank, you know. Problem is, he smoked a lot of crack. I had to smoke crack at that point in my life. So I had a goal when I left rehab. And yeah, again, we don't really need to get into all that, but that's what, when I go to rehab, I hear about a bunch of new stuff that's out there, and I'm like, well, I haven't tried that. It sounds great. But the point, so I ended up going back to my parents' house, and that place was rather expensive. Again, my parents did more for me than I think I deserve. But the point is, now there's an added layer in the engineering brain of my dad. His retirement is now going and getting invested in my not being a shithead, you know? And so it's deeper now. Because now when I'm drinking and doing these things, it's like, I wanted a boat. I'm not going to get a boat because I sent you to McCord, you know? And I remember these talks. It's funny, my parents were up here last weekend, which that relationship is absolutely incredible today. There are amazing things that this program can do, and that's one of them. And my mom was talking about the monster. It talks about in our literature, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. She didn't know which. I mean, she's literally sitting there saying, it's like there were two people. And she's talking to my dad. She's like, you remember when we used to say, I wonder who we're going to talk to today, if it's the monster or Jamie? And that's one of the cool things about this program, is I get to sit in the back seat and go, yeah. Yeah. But the cool thing is they were up here last weekend because they were helping me do things for the house I just bought. You know, those are the call. You know, I a few months ago, I got to call my mom, and it was a Friday after work, and I got, you know, she said, hello, what are you doing? And I said, I just put a contract in on a new house, you know? And I got to hear that that voice pause, you know? Because those were not the phone calls my mom would get, you know? Those are the phone calls that she would get is, are you the parents of James Charlotte, you know, and because, you know, he was just admitted in our ER. He rolled his trucks 8 times, you know, and I don't know if anybody here has heard about how those phone calls go, but they don't share a lot. They leave a lot of questions, you know, and so the feelings, I mean, she didn't sleep for months and months because she was waiting on that call. See, when I'm selfish and self-centered, so when I think that my drinking is just hurting me, no, that's not the case, you know. To this day, I get to hear about some of those things that my brain purposely forgets. You know, because when I think about, you know, drinking and drugging, it doesn't go back to the bad stuff. You know, my brain goes like, all right, you know, get off work on a Friday, go to a bar. I never drank in bars. There's too many people. But my brain, you know, I walk in, Lynyrd Skynyrd's playing on the, you know, on the speakers. You know, I walk up, sit at the bar, order a beer. I'll drink it, you know, I'll start talking to all these people, it'll be a great time, I'll maybe have another beer. It's 10 o'clock, okay, yeah, no, that's all, I'll get my check, go home, show up to work tomorrow. That's never happened. But for some reason, that's what I think's going to happen. And my story is I may walk into that bar, I may order that beer, but the second I start to feel the effects that alcohol produced for me, it's like, I got to get what I want. And I'm in some sketchy place, somewhere with somebody I shouldn't be with. And I may wake up in Georgia. I may wake up in North Carolina. I may wake up in Mexico. You know, I have no control over what happens. You know, it may be a week, maybe a month. I may not make it back. You know, I've been to a lot of funerals since I've been in here. But it's, you know, the point being, you know, when I was finally, and like I said, when my first time coming into AA, I was not a white chip wonder. And that's okay. You know, if you're in here and you haven't, you know, relapse is a part of my story, but it's not in the big book anywhere. You know, it does not have to be a part of your story if you, you know. I want things to be, they've got to be absolutely miserable before I change. But yeah, I came in, you know, this. So I'm only really going to concentrate on this past time getting sober, because I learned a lot in those other times, but this is where the work was really put in for me, you know. And I was in Dunwoody. That's where I got, you know, at the clubhouse 8111 is where I got sober this past time. And I remember walking in, and my sobriety birthday is the 28th, my belly button birthday is the 21st. And I remember that last drink that I shared about earlier, and hoping I never forget that, because that was the first time that I had had access to drugs and alcohol. I'd had the money, but I literally wanted to die. You know, it's actually the first time in my life that I actually started planning out the ways to do it. You know, and that's sad. You know, I'm 22 years old, sitting in my, you know, in my room in my parents' house, literally starting to plan, because I knew I didn't want to die. I didn't want to hurt anybody else anymore. You know, I wanted to figure out the best way to kill myself where it wouldn't look like I killed myself. Because, you know, it looked like just a tragedy that, you know, but I wouldn't be a burden on anybody else ever again, you know. And I don't know, God has been a part of my life since the beginning, you know, as far back as I can remember. But at that time, I had really not felt like I had a relationship with him, so to speak. But now is when God really became a part of my life. And spoiler, if that word upsets you, a power greater than yourself is the same thing. I'm just lazy, saying God is easier for me. But yeah, my experience with the program Alcoholics Anonymous is AA got me connected to God. You know, I mean, and that's just my experience. I had a lot of issues with the word God, and kind of in our, you know, my experience has been is when I started to see the seriousness of my condition, the issues with God became less of a big deal. Because it was like, well, you know, I'm sitting over here waking up in ditches, like, oh, I don't believe in God, you know, and it's like, what am I? A big trend with me is when I just quit fighting everything, you know, if I quit trying to find the loophole and just do what the people in front of me did. You know, I went into a meeting and I had a home group. You know, somebody said you should get a home group, you should get a service position. And I did, you know, I actually didn't choose the service position I got. And I didn't even see my grand sponsor, Christian. He was so smart, way smarter than me. So he didn't even say, you've got a service position. He said, here's what I want you to do. Show up every Monday at 5:30. Just show up here and make some coffee with me. I went, okay. I mean, that's meetings at 7:30. That's kind of a long time. But the cool thing is he didn't say, you have a service position to make coffee. But after about 4 or 5 weeks of doing it, it was like, man, I've been pretty consistent with this. I guess I'm the coffee maker. And I made the shit out of that coffee. And at that time, there wasn't many things I was doing right, but I could make some damn coffee. And you had to, it was in one of those churches in Dunwoody, and you had to walk on the other side of the place to fill up the water and walk it back. And I took it really serious. But the thing is so we'd get there at 5:30, we'd start making coffee, and there was always a point about 45 minutes before the meeting would start where the coffee was getting set up, and we would all sit around the couch, and we'd just sit there and talk. You know, and that was the first time that I became completely honest with 4 or 5 other men in my life. You know, and really, really cool, because we all didn't have bad days at the same time. But we picked each other up. You know, I remember there was a guy there that had just started his own business. There was a guy there that was having a baby. You know, at that time, I was just mastering brushing my teeth twice a day. But I was showing up. You know, I had to be taught how to suit up and show up. You know, things that I do today, when I wake up, first thing I do is I make my bed. Because I did another thing right to start the day off. You know, and I pray and I do stuff like that. And that's not stuff that I came in here knowing how to do. Grocery shopping. I had to be taught how to do that. You know. I found out that if when you wash clothes, if you go ahead and put the clothes from the washer in the dryer right then when they're done, and you wait for those to finish drying and then you fold them, it's really a lot easier than if you just throw, you know, clothes in the washer and then they mold and you got to wash them again. And then, you know, and then you just run out of boxers and you go, okay, well, that's just what's going to happen this week. And, so it's stuff like that, you know, learning how to do these things, but sitting there and just being completely honest with those guys, I really started to see the program start to do some really, really cool things. You know, I started hearing them share again, nobody said you need to do 90 meetings in 90 days. But I kind of was in that place of, I don't know how to do this. What did you do? Well, I went to 90 meetings in 90 days. I'm not saying that that's a requirement, but I went to a little over 420 meetings in my first year of sobriety. Granted, I wasn't employed. You know, there was a lot of time. I'd go up to the 8111 clubhouse. I'd, for sometimes two, three meetings a day. But I got in the habit of going to meetings no matter what. One of the things that I thought was I would wait until I needed a meeting and then I'd go to one. But that's not who I am as an alcoholic. By the time I need a meeting, if I'm not used to going to them, I go to the liquor store. Same thing with a sponsor. I'll wait till I need them before I call them. No, I had to call, even to this day, I call my sponsor, not every day, but every 2 to 3 days. And, you know, in that step work that we did, because I remember the first time, because I'd read the big book a lot, of, you know, here and there, but I remember the first time sitting down with that sponsor who broke it down word for word with me. And I'm going to read the bedevilments from the big book, and that was the first time I'd really had that moment of I relate with everything in this, because that was where my life was at that point. And it says we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with our personal relationships. Check. We couldn't control our emotional natures. Check. We were prey to misery and depression. Check. We couldn't make a living. Nope. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Was not a basic a solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. And, you know, and that, so I remember on page 52, sitting down with that sponsor and going, yeah, tell me more, you know? And the cool thing about that is, you know, there was kind of this, well, what are you going to do about it? You know, what are you going to do about it? The 12 steps are designed, and, well, I'm not, there I go, making statements like I know. My experience has been that I worked the 12 steps that got me connected to a power greater than myself, and the obsession to drink and use any other mind-altering substance disappeared. You know, and I have not had the obsession to drink and use. You want to know how I know that? Because I'm not the alcoholic that goes to a meeting when I get the obsession. I don't. I go to the liquor store. You know, I mean, I've never beat the obsession. I am 0 for 400 and whatever, you know. I have to work my program in complete avoidance of the obsession. You know, and maybe, you know, and that's just how I have to work my program. Everybody's got a different, you know, some people call their sponsors, some people do that. You know, I just have to make sure that I cannot compete against the obsession, no matter what. You know, and working steps, you know, I showed up here. You know, I did my third step in the room over there, which if you nobody knows, there's a vending machine in there. So there's a lot of traffic. And for some reason in my head, one of the worst things that could happen is I'm getting down, you know, praying with another guy and somebody could walk in. And sure as shit, somebody walked in and it was like, oh, God. And I don't know why that, you know, that feeling is, but again, for some reason I trusted that the man sitting across from me at that table, he was telling the truth when he said I didn't have to live like this anymore, you know. And you know, going more through the steps, the steps are in order for a reason, you know. I always thought the ninth step needed to be done in the first 30 days. And I made myself look like an idiot. No, it's different this time. It's different. I'm really going to quit drinking this time. No, but it's, you know, some things that I was able to do differently is getting involved. You know, one of the things that had about 6 months of sobriety, I remember calling my sponsor and complaining about something. And he goes, you know what I think you should do? He said, I think you should take meetings into the jails. And I got to tell you, I don't know if I'd be sober today if it wasn't for those meetings at the jails. I started taking meetings up to Cobb County at 6 months of sobriety. Or no, it was actually 8 months. I remember I sent in my application stuff, and I didn't hear from anybody. You know, and they said on there, we'll even let you know if it's a no. And I'm like, oh, shit. I forgot about a warrant here or something. I don't know what it was. But God, you know, it's God showed up. I did my fourth and fifth step with another alcoholic, and that day, walking out of that, I got the call. Because I didn't have anything to provide until I started doing the work. You know, and now I'm taking meetings up to Cherokee. I'm actually this area's correction representative. Basically, I get yelled at by the sheriff when everything goes wrong. But it's really cool. I get to walk inside a jail, spend an hour in there, and walk out. You know, and it's really cool. You know, I get to walk up to these police officers, and the worst thing they can do to me is tell me to leave. Okay, you know, you know, but carrying the message, I will never forget that feeling I had with Jason in that rehab, bringing the message to the alcoholic, you know, and. The success rate, you know, there's not a lot of people that go from jail to here. But, and that's honestly, we're just, you know, going in there and basically telling them, when you're ready, there, you don't have to live like this. You know, and it's really fulfilling. You know, some of the most honest first steps I've ever seen is these big old dudes in a jail meeting crying their eyes out because alcohol has whipped their ass. You know, and it's like, man, wow. You know, I graduated college in this stint of sobriety. Actually, it was welding school, so it's a little bit different. But I got a gown. I had a diploma. It was college, damn it. And it's funny because if any of you know any welders, it's a man's man thing, you know, and I figured out that I was hiding behind that, you know. I was trying to figure out how many times I could tell you I was a welder in a conversation, you know. And even at the shop that I work in, it's like, who can outman the man beside you? And I am so grateful for the program that I get to use today, that I get to bring to work every day, because I work with a lot of drug addicts and alcoholics. You know, and it's... it's really cool. This thing works outside of these walls in here. And I'm super, super grateful for that. Because if not, I'm allergic to just being a human, I think. I don't know. It's like everything, for some reason, upsets me. It's everything's done to me. You know, I'm selfish. I'm self-centered again. But I get the choice today to do something about it. You know, I religiously... maybe that's not a good word. I am in a habit. I do my inventories at night. You know, my sponsor, and I've been doing them for 3 years, and it's almost obsessive. But I, like I said, I'm not. I don't know what thing caught this time, but I'm not really willing to figure it out, because I'm not going to stop doing things, and then when I drink, go, oh, okay, it was that. You know, and it's nothing really crazy. You know, it's a lot of. I wouldn't say easy, but simple things. You know, I show up to meetings. I need to do more of that. The job, you know, the life AA gave me, it's really, I got to be careful, because a lot of times I'll let the life AA gave me kind of corner me out from going to AA, because I don't have time. I got this job, I got this, I got that, you know, I got a house, I got to, you know, reseal the windows, you know, and it's like, I fail to realize that I couldn't even have a bank account when I was out there drinking and using. You know, I used to pay for my tobacco with change. You know, and that's, you know, and coming up here, the Howe Place, my second home group was actually the Night Owls, but again, the blessings came in very, very quick in my life. And I couldn't stay out until 11:30 at night, you know, anymore. I got a job that we got to be at the shop at 5:30 in the morning, and I work all the way in Mableton, which is funny because that's not a very good part of town. Well, Fulton Industrial's not, you know, it's almost funny because I've been there in other times of my life around that time in the morning. One of my least favorite things to do is watch the sunrise when I was out there using. Because I would always have these plans where I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do this. And after about the third day of staying up, watching the sun rise again, I used to get that pit in my stomach. because it's like, man, I got to do this another day, you know. And now I get to see some really cool sunrises, and I get to, you know, I just get to experience a lot of really, really cool things. It's not all rainbows and unicorns, but because that was one of the things that I thought was going to happen. You know, I was going to come in here, I was going to get sober, and everything was going to be okay. Everything was going to get better. It was going to be okay. That's not been my experience. I came in here, I quit drinking, I quit using, and stuff got weird really quick. I figured out pretty quickly why I drank and used. I did not like myself. You know, and the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous has gotten me to be, you know, little by little, a little bit more okay with myself. You know, I have a God-sized hole, and I was willing to put just about anything in there. I wish I, you know, tried exercise or something like that, but no, it was never that, you know. And my experience has been that it's not all rainbows and unicorns, but I do get a design for living that works with anything, you know. And when I just kind of surrender to the process, some really cool things happen. Like buying a house. People like me, we don't do stuff like that, you know. I mean, even sitting across the table from the lawyer and the closing attorney, you know, all these people, and they're starting to use some really big numbers and some really big language, and I'm like, are you sure? Like, I mean, I'll do it, but are you sure? But it all started with learning how to suit up and show up to these meetings in here. You know, that didn't happen overnight. I suit up and show up daily at work because I was taught how to do that with the coffee. You know? And there's a lot of times that I don't necessarily want to shoot. I did not want to come this morning. I'll be completely honest with you. My eye hurts. But it's an honor to be able to come up, and, you know, because I just feel so... I couldn't have done this for another decade or two out there using. And today I haven't had a single thought about wanting to kill myself in this past time being in sobriety. I haven't, you know, I've had some tough days, yes, but I haven't had that thought. And that was pretty much a daily occurrence. And it's, like I said, it's overwhelming to come up here and have to try and combine in an hour all the positive, you know, all of what this program has done for me in my life, because it's just so much, you know. And I didn't really plan anything, you know. There was a few times this past week where I was like, all right, maybe let's kind of try and get a little bit of a plan going, and God showed me yesterday, like, man, just go up there and wing it, I can sort of see, but it's but no, it's an amazing program. If you're new in here, you know, one of my biggest fears is that it would work for you guys, but it wouldn't work for me, you know. And my experience has been, I didn't do it perfectly. I did it to the best of my ability, and since then, I haven't had the obsession to drink and use, you know. I can remember the first time that the obsession. I've shared this before, but I was in a QT. I walked in the QT. I got my tobacco. I walked out. Got in my car, drove off. If you're an alcoholic like me, that's a big deal. Because I was obsessed with alcohol. I loved the packaging, I loved the marketing, I loved the color. Shoot, I relapsed one time on Bud Platinum because of the bottle. You know? And I loved everything about it. And so when I walked in there, and I just got what I needed, and I walked out. And I was probably 40, 45 days sober at that point. The obsession was removed pretty quickly for me, but I started doing the work immediately, you know. And I don't know where in the scheme of things the obsession was removed, but that was how powerful it was. Is it wasn't like, okay, I don't think about drugs and alcohol anymore. And now, generally speaking, the only time I think about drugs and alcohol are in an AA meeting. And that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool for me. You know, and like I said, if you're new in here, get a sponsor, get a book. A competent sponsor. I had to be taught that too. My first sponsor, I got him because he had a truck. I was like, I want a truck. So, you know, and, but anyways, but it's really good. I don't think there's a better way to start a weekend off than this meeting in here. it charges me up. I love coming in here. I got some really close friends, you know, some family in here, you know, and I'm just really, really honored to be a part of it. And I appreciate you asking me to share my story. That's all I got.